Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, NITP's For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about FSA Feds, F-E-D-S, and we're here with Bart Turney. Bart is with ADP's Strategic Advisory Services, but nonetheless, it's FSA Feds. Good morning, Bart.
Good morning, Bob. Thank you for having me this morning.
Yeah, I think it's been about a year.
It seems to be this time every year. I can count on this, just like the leaves changing.
All right. Well, we're going to change people's minds that are not involved with it today so that they can change with the leaves. What is FSA Feds?
Well, FSA Feds is the flexible spending account program for federal employees at participating agencies. Just like you have flexible spending accounts in the private sector, the federal government adopted a program a number of years ago that is FSA Feds, and this is where most feds will come to get their flexible spending accounts.
Okay. Now, we're in open season, of course, and we generally bring in the insurance companies. This is not quite an insurance company, so some listeners may not understand what a flexible spending account is.
Absolutely. And so federal benefits open season starts next Monday on November 11th. And, you know, FSAs are unique. There's two types of accounts, really. There's the health care FSA and there's the dependent care. The dependent care is the type of account that most people refer to as a daycare flexible spending account. And that's for your daycare expenses that will allow a federal employee to work, look for work, or attend school full time. On the other side, in what's often tied to these to the open season health benefit fairs, is the healthcare FSA, and what it does is it allows an employee to set aside money pre-tax to pay for healthcare expenses that aren't paid for by their health insurance. So it really doesn't matter whose health plan you have, you can still have a healthcare FSA and save on taxes.
Okay, so for those of you all listening, that was Bart hit the bullseye with that, but it's not health insurance.
It is not health insurance. It works with your health insurance. It supplements your health insurance. It pays for your out-of-pocket expenses that your health insurance doesn't cover.
Okay. So if somebody's listening, so that they're real clear, you're going to buy health insurance from whatever company you feel it best. This is flexible spending account. So with what's left of your salary, which should be a lot or a little, depending on what your expenses are and what your withholding is, if you're spending money anywhere for childcare, if you're spending money for the other thing we talked about, anyway, here's a way to have it taken from your salary, pre-tax, all taxes. No federal tax, and if applicable, no state tax. Not all states have a state income tax. That's what I meant by that. And it's not subject to Medicare or FICA. So it's a quadruple tax-free benefit.
Absolutely. That's the only reason to have a flexible spending account. I try to explain to people because they seem to understand their health benefits and that their premiums come out before taxes. That's a good thing. They also understand those people who participate in the thrift savings plan. They realize that those contributions come out before taxes. This is the same thing. FSA contributions come out pre-tax. That's the benefit of the program. That's the only reason to do it. And as you mentioned, this is for those expenses that you have. You know, these are your out-of-pocket expenses. On the healthcare side, we always talk about your deductibles, your copays, your coinsurance, things like that that you're going to have out of pocket anyway that aren't completely covered.
Right, and so you'd actually be then getting the deduction. Otherwise, it's very hard to get a medical deduction because it has to exceed in 2013 10% of your quote adjusted gross income, roughly speaking, your total income. That's a huge number to beat. So here you have an opportunity to put money away and use the FSA account. Now, once the money leaves the individual's paycheck, where does it go?
It goes into their account that they set up with us at ADP. We're the third-party administrator for OPM's Flexible Spending Account Program. So what we do is we coordinate with BeneFeds and the employees' payroll providing agencies. We get the allotments from their paycheck. It goes into their FSA Feds account. They can monitor their account online at our website, fsafeds.com, 24 hours a day. They can call one of our benefits counselors Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. To check on information. But the kind of information they can get on the website is they can see how much is in their account. They can see what claims have been paid. They can see what claims are pending. All of that they can monitor online right now.
While the money is taken from the salary and then put into the FSA account, does it earn money? Does it go up with the market? Does it go down with the market? Does it equal the G fund rate?
No. This is just a flat bank account. It has no savings, no interest paid on it, not an interest-bearing account. Whatever you put into the account, you will have that available to spend, no more, no less.
Okay, so again, for those listening, it's not an investment-type vehicle where you're looking for a rate of return. The administrative fees are extremely low. We'll talk about that later. But the point being is, it's no different than if it was in your checkbook and you had to write a check for the copay, for the doc, etc.
Absolutely.
But it escaped all the taxes.
Exactly. Once again, that's the only reason to do this. Uncle Sam gives you very few tax breaks now. And this is one that, federal employees can get with very little work on their part.
So the person that would be, I guess, attracted to this would probably be most people, somebody with a copay, and or we can go on the educational side. So I think we hit a little bit. We'll come back to the copays and the medical part. But what about the educational part?
Well, and I want to make the distinction. It's not necessarily educational as much as daycare. It covers those expenses that will allow eligible dependents to go to daycare, whether it's a daycare in your own home, a daycare facility. It even covers summer camps for those individuals who maybe don't have their children in daycare during the year, but do during the summer since they're out of school. It covers those expenses that will allow an employee and their spouse to look for work or attend school full time. It is for expenses that are for children who are under the age of 13 or an individual that you claim is a dependent on your income tax return that's incapable of self-care. So it provides that care for those individuals during the work hours that the federal employee works.
So put another way, for me to understand it, if it's money I would have otherwise spent, we're not looking for additional monies to be spent. It's money that we would have spent anyway. But if we can do it pre-tax, we can afford it a lot better than doing it the other way. I don't mean to put people asleep, but let's say that somebody puts $1,000 into an FSA account. We'll talk about the maximum, but let's just work with this. And let's say they're combined federal, state, FICA, and whatnot, and this would not be hard to get to, is 35%.
Absolutely, yeah.
They're going to save $350. If they didn't do it, then they would have to write a check out of their checking account, already have paid the tax, so they have less money to spend on this.
Right.
So in other words, $1,000 goes in here, it's paid for the issue that we're paying for. We spend the $1,000.
Absolutely, right.
If you do it outside of that, that same $1,000 is not $1,000, it's $650, so you've got to pull another $350 out of your pocket.
Exactly.
So it actually has a really nice multiplier effect.
No, and you hit the nail on the head talking about this being a pre-tax benefit. A lot of people will look at this and say, well, you know what? I'm just going to take the dependent tax credit on my income taxes, okay? I don't want to worry about this during the year. I'm going to wait till I get, start preparing my taxes, and I'll just take that deduction there. And what they don't realize is you're only allowed to take up to 35% of your dependent care, your daycare expenses, up to $3,000 for one child. And then once again, you're only allowed to claim 35% of your daycare expenses up to $6,000 if you have multiple children. So you have to hit those thresholds first. You only get the maximum of 35%. The more money you make, the less of that 35% you get. So with the dependent care FSA, doing it pre-tax is often a much better deal for most people.
Okay. Now, with regards to daycare, can it go a step further to do like pre-kindergarten?
Yeah, it does. It does. If it, you have a child who is, you know, in that pre-K area, it also covers their expenses as well. And it covers before and after school expenses as well. Many children will be in a before or after school program. And then the only caveat is that if you're doing that, whatever you show on your bill or statement, it has to be separate from any tuition. Obviously, it's not an issue if you're talking about a public institution. But if your child's in a private facility and there's some sort of tuition involved, in order to break this out, we have to have that either before or after school care broken out separately.
Okay, let's just go to second gear, but not forget first. All righty. So second gear says, well, gee, this sounds great. How much can I put in? Is there a maximum amount that an individual, it's a key on an individual, can put in?
Okay, do we want to address dependent care first or health care? Because it's a little bit different from both.
Let's do both. Okay. Dependent care first.
Okay, dependent care first. The maximum amount that you can put into a dependent care account is $5,000. Now, that $5,000 limit, that is a household limit, meaning that in conjunction with whatever subsidy a federal employee may receive or whether a spouse also has an FSA, the maximum amount that they can get credit for put into anything pre-tax is $5,000. Okay?
Okay, let me make sure I understand this. We have now a married couple, and they're both feds. Or they might even be private industry, I suppose, because they can have the same type of plan. Even though there's a $5,000 limit, it's not $5,000 per spouse.
Correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
Absolutely. But what I will say, and this was just in the news, I believe, FSAs have been around since 1981, and I believe the dependent care FSA was capped at $5,000 in 1986. Okay, that's how long ago this was, and it was never adjusted for inflation. In that time, since 1986, it has not been adjusted for inflation at all. And so, you know, anybody who has children in daycare, wherever they are, you know, they're probably going to exceed that $5,000 pretty early in the year. I believe that there will be a bill that's going to be introduced here pretty soon to actually double that amount to $10,000. So that's something to people to follow in the news. Maybe contact, you know, their representatives. But that's where we are with this $5,000. Now with the healthcare FSA, that works a little bit differently. We had the big whammy as a result of the Affordable Care Act beginning of 2013, and the healthcare FSAs were capped at $2,500. Now, that's for everybody. It's not just the federal program. That's for all FSAs, also in the private sector as well. But that is an individual limit, which means that in the case you talked about, two working spouses, you could actually combine two $2,500 FSAs to have a total of $5,000 for the household.
Okay, so I could, again, with a couple. It's pretty clear what it is as an individual.
Yes.
Okay. So as a couple, there could be no more than $5,000 going into the...
to the dependent care FSA.
Okay.
Yes.
But we could each do $2,500 that goes into the...
healthcare FSA.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. So just everybody listening, this is... understandable concept, but when you get into the numbers, like anything else, sometimes it just doesn't make sense. Why does one do this and why does one do that? But so we're very clear now. All righty. Now let's just take a tangent over to the high deductible healthcare plans. Don't want to spend a lot of time here, but with regards to a high deductible healthcare plan that we talked about on prior shows and we'll talk about a lot next week, somebody can elect to do that and then get a tax deduction for money that they put away into a health savings account.
Yes.
Okay.
And as the IRS regulations are currently written right now, you cannot have a health savings account and a regular flexible spending account. Okay, that's the way the rules are written. So if you're in a high deductible health plan with an HSA, you can't have a regular FSA. It doesn't matter whether you're a federal employee or not. So what OPM asked us to do was to offer a limited expense healthcare FSA or a LEX healthcare FSA. And what that allows is that allows a tax deduction, the tax break on dental and vision expenses only. So if you are a federal employee and, you know, and HSAs and the high deductible health plans and HSAs are becoming more unpopular as people are really trying to manage their health care expenses. If you're a federal employee and you're in a high deductible health plan with an HSA, you can enroll in a limited expense health care FSA with FSA feds and set aside money on a pre-tax basis for dental and vision care expenses. But okay. It's dental and vision only.
All right. Now, the listeners, again, it's limited to dental
and vision.
And vision. All righty, so we might have a dental and vision program on the side, but this would pay for the things that it otherwise wouldn't pay, or it might make sense to do this and just do it. Now, how much can we put into that one?
It is just like the regular healthcare FSA. The maximum amount is $2,500.
Okay. All righty. Then dental and vision for, I guess, the norm. Probably isn't going to be much more than. And notice I said norm, but if we go in for advanced dental attention, it can go over that. But if we had $2,500 in the pot, now, correct me if I'm wrong here. If I wanted to enroll in this, and the money would start coming out as soon as I enroll, or do I have to wait till January 1st of the following year before it starts?
If you're not a current participant, then you're going to be waiting until January 1st, 2014, for example. And what will happen is that first pay period of the year, that's when the first allotment will come out of your paycheck. So, you know, starting January 1, you will be eligible to incur expenses. We'll take that first allotment out of your first paycheck in January.
Okay, now that allotment I can string along the entire year to hit the max by the end of the year. So I said I don't have to, quote, front load it.
Well, the way the accounts work is differently. With the dependent care or the daycare account, it works just like a bank account. Whatever you have in the account is available to you for reimbursement. Okay, so if you have $500 in the account and you send us a bill from your daycare provider for $600, we're going to reimburse the $500 to you. And then we're going to wait until that additional deposit comes in, and then we'll give you the other $100. With the health care, it's a little bit different. Because these are health care-related expenses, the IRS says that money has to be available to you up front. So starting January 1, if you've enrolled for 2014, starting January 1, you can actually incur a health care expense, and we have to reimburse you up to the full amount of your annual election, regardless of whether or not we've actually taken that money from your paycheck.
I'll take it one step further, and you'll probably get mad at me for bringing this up, but I learned it the hard way a fair number of years ago. We do a significant amount of retirement planning seminars, as well as mid-career and beginning career, and somebody came up and said, I'm retiring at the end of February, and I need a lot of dental work. Well, and they were not going to be paying all that up front. And he said, would the FSA? And I had a hard time conceptually saying, yeah, they'll pay for the whole thing. And yeah, you will.
Yeah. That's the way that FSAs are set up. I mean, there's risk on the participant side, the employee side, for trying to figure out what they're going to put into their account for the year. The risk on the employer side is that you may have an employee on the healthcare side who has been reimbursed all of their healthcare expenses for that example, let's say the dental work in February, and then they decide to retire or leave the company or organization, and then you know you're stuck holding that bill. That's the way the rules are. In this case, the employing agency is not going to come after the former employee. OPM's not going to come after them, and we're not going to come after them. At that point, whatever they've been reimbursed ahead of or, you know, more than what we've actually taken from their salary, it's between them and the IRS at that point.
Okay. Now, on the other side, I start January 1st, and I've heard that if I don't spend the money by a certain period of time, then I lose the money. Then it's kind of like I start over. It's like the odometer goes back to zero. But do I have to spend the money within that calendar year? Again, I start January 1st. Do I have to have spent it by December 31st, or do they give me a break?
Well, and we'll talk about the OPM program, and then we'll talk about something that was just in the news that I'll mention that's directly related to that. With the OPM program, OPM offers what's called a grace period. So there's an additional 2.5 months to spend that money. So if you look at what our benefit period truly is, it's a 14.5 month benefit period. It runs from January 1 of 1 year through March 15th of the following year. During that 14.5 month period, you can incur an expense and it will go against that benefit period's, you know, election that you've made. Now, what's also happened this past week is that the Treasury Department announced that employers who offer flexible spending accounts can now allow their employees to roll over $500 into the next benefit period. They will allow employers to do one or the other. You can either offer a grace period or you can offer the rollover of $500. You cannot do both. So being this close to open season and the new benefit period, you know, OPM's program will continue with the grace period. Now, they're going to want to do some due diligence, I'm sure, next year and look at spending patterns, you know, forfeiture amounts, things like that, before making any changes. So, you know, there'll be questions. People will see this in the news and they'll say, hey, can we do this now with this program? We're going to stick with the grace period, at least for the 2014 benefit period.
Okay, that's great. Now, I get questions, should I do this? And I said, if you can afford it, you should. The response comes back, well, I don't know if I'm going to spend that. Historically, I don't spend that much. And I said, well, you don't have to put in the max. Correct me if I'm wrong. And let's say the profile of the individual spends $750 in copays and whatnot. I said, try $750. And then if you find that you wish you had, could put in more, then next year we'll put in more, but you really need to get started.
That's a good point. The minimum amount you can elect for the year is $250. Now, that's less than $10 a pay period. You know, if you just want to get your feet wet and get used to the program. You know, I talked to, you know, talk to employees who are just starting their careers in federal service. They're young. They're out of school. They don't have many expenses. You know, maybe they go to the doctor once a year and they'll look at me and say, you know, I don't, you know, I, you know, have one dental visit. I have one doctor's visit. I don't have eyeglasses. I don't have any other issues. You know, is it worth me putting the money in there? You know, honestly, it's probably not the best account for you right now. Now, as you, as your career moves forward and, you know, maybe you start a family or you have medical expenses, then you probably need to revisit it. This is for people who know they're going to have some expenses. So, yeah, for you take that person with, you know, they know they're going to have the $750. Yeah, they need to get started. And, you know, you can get started at the $250 amount or that $750 if they wanted to.
Or the max is?
$2,500, absolutely. You know, I talked with a woman last year that was, you know, she's just closing the 30th year of her, you know, her federal employment service. And, she just started doing FSA a couple of years ago, and she says that, you know, now it hasn't been available to federal employees since 1981 like they have in the private sector, but she said she didn't get in the beginning, and she's still kicking herself because, you know, she just is amazed at how it works, how much money she saves. So, you know, she's a good advocate for the program.
Okay. We're going to open up the phone lines. It's about 10:30 Eastern. What do you call it now? Daylight savings time, right? Is that right, Andrew? Standard time? Thank you, Andrew. And Bart, you probably knew that too. 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. This morning's discussion thus far has been on FSA feds. You could take it off on a tangent and ask a tax or finance question as well. Benefit questions maybe ought not to be asked on this show, although you might know the answer to them, Bart. I don't.
Well, I could probably get myself into trouble, but you know, we'll see what happens.
All righty. Let's say that somebody knows that they're going to have a child in a calendar year, but don't have that child yet January 1st. All right, so they have a reasonable expectation that it'll happen before the end of the year. I think that's biologically accurate.
Yes.
So could they then do that, and when the child presents themselves, would they be covered under this?
Well, there's two ways to look at it. The first way is to, you know, in a very proactive manner, plan for having those child care expenses. And one, you're going to have some additional health care related expenses because of that child. Two, you might have some dependent care expenses if after, you know, whatever leave period that the employee has, the child goes into a daycare program. You know, if the employees want to have the maximum amount of money available to them, they'd want to enroll during open season. So that money is in the account and ready to incur those eligible expenses. The other way to do it is to wait until the child is born or adopted or, you know, whatever they might do during the benefit period. And then based on a qualifying life event, you know, an IRS-defined qualifying life event, they could start a healthcare FSA. They could increase the money they're putting in their healthcare FSA. They could also start a dependent care FSA at that point. So there's really two different ways to look at it.
All right. So this, the contributions to this aren't necessarily X divided by 26 pay periods.
Well, they are unless you start during the year.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you can only start during the year outside of open season if you have one of those IRS qualifying life events.
Okay.
Yep.
All righty. Then what happens if I leave federal service? Is there any, can I take this account with me in case my new employer has a similar program?
The account is not portable per se. If you leave federal service, if you're leaving your agency and you're not going to another agency that offers FSA feds, the accounts work two ways. With the healthcare FSA, the IRS requires that whatever you have in your account at the last day of service, you've had to incur an eligible expense prior to that last date of service. So bottom line is whatever you have in your account, you have to spend it before you leave, put it simply. With the dependent care account, it works differently. You actually have until the end of the benefit period or until you spend down whatever your account balance is that is available to you.
So we could have left federal service and still spend down the
On the dependent care side, yes, you can.
Okay.
It does not work that way for health care. The expense has to be incurred prior to the last date of service.
Okay. Again, for those listening, we got two different types of accounts. One has this kind of nice deal, and the other one, I won't say doesn't have as nice a deal, but it's not as nice a deal.
It's not as nice a deal, which is another reason that people really have to plan on, you know, what they think is going to happen in the year. You mentioned the good part of the deal is that you can get all that money available to you up front. Hey, that's great. The flip side of that is that, okay, you have to incur that before you leave.
Okay. That's, you know, it's fair.
It is fair.
Depending on who's listening to that, they might argue with me, but, you know, one seems to equal the other. Now, I'm going to mention an ugly word, and let's hope we don't ever have to bring it up again, furloughed. So if an individual is furloughed, there was no compensation coming. How does that – do they catch up then when the furlough is over? You don't know that it's going to be – if the back salary is going to be paid. Historically, it has. Yeah. But how does that work?
Well, it would work that way. It would work just like any leave without pay, okay? On a leave without pay, if the account hasn't been pre-funded, in this case, there would have been no expectation that the account – had been pre-funded, what we would do is that when the furlough period ends, then we would basically prorate what they had elected for the year, what we haven't collected, based on the amount of pay periods that are there.
Okay.
So whatever was remaining to go into the account would have to go in there, but it would be based on the remaining pay dates. If they do get paid for that furlough period, and like you said, they have in the past, then they're not going to notice anything different. You know, we have had a lot of questions. Can I change my FSA election during the furlough period? No, you cannot. It's not an IRS qualifying life event, and that's what dictates you know, the rules and regulations for FSAs.
Okay. Now I asked you the question with a yet to be born dependent. Let's say that I do have a dependent, but I don't want to include them for whatever reason. Do I have to because I have a dependent?
No, not at all. Not at all. You don't have to. The benefit is that, you know, you've got the two types of accounts, and really three, but, you know, you're looking at, for a dependent, you're looking at either daycare or healthcare-related expenses, but you don't have to include them at all.
Okay, we're going through open season. Does open season impact you all?
Oh, very much so, because this is when we have all of the enrollments for the entire year, with the exception of, you know, new hire employees. So, you know, the message that we always have to get out is that, you know, flexible spending, FSA Feds works a little bit differently than the other benefits that federal employees have. Their benefits don't roll, you know, their benefits roll over, FSA Feds doesn't. So you have to enroll each and every open season. So that's why we try to make sure we get that word out. We do a number of reminders to current participants that it's not like your health plan. You know, you like your health plan and don't want to make any changes, you don't have to do anything. It's not the case with FSA Feds. You still have to enroll if you want to participate in 2014.
And the best time to start would be?
Well, Monday, November 11th. You have this year from Monday, November 11th through Monday, December 9th. That's the benefits period open season this year. We will take enrollments online or by phone during that period, and we hope to, you know, to help anybody out. They can call our toll free number, and you know, talk to a benefits counselor if they do have some questions. But the best resource that we have is definitely the website fsafeds.com.
Okay, but if I wanted to go outside December 9th for FSA Feds, we're not talking about the health care, could I sign up as late as December 31st for the upcoming year?
And unless there's been an extension for some sort of extenuating circumstance that you may have, no, you cannot. Once again, if you're outside of whatever the open season window is, whether it's the federal program or any other program, you have to have one of those IRS qualifying life events.
Okay, I just wanted to draw a parallel between the two because some people might be zeroing in on calendar year, calendar year, calendar
year. Yes.
It is calendar year, but you need to be there before the end of open
Correct.
Season. Okay. All these little things. It's almost like reading tax law.
It is tax law. That's the key. You know, this is tax law, and that's why it doesn't make sense, some of it. But, you know, it's what we're allowed, so we need to take advantage of whatever we can get.
All righty. Now, some of the things that can be used as a reimbursement from FSA Feds, I got this down here, sunscreen.
Yeah, sunscreen's important, obviously, for a number of reasons. But yeah, as long as it has an SPF, you know, higher than 15, then yes, you can get reimbursed for sunscreen purchases.
And massage therapy?
Massage therapy, if it has what's called a letter of medical necessity. The bottom line is your doctor has to have prescribed massage therapy to treat a specific condition that you have. Once again, you know, it's good that letter would indicate, you know, the therapy is treating you to alleviate whatever symptoms that you're having for this condition, and it has to be for a specified period of time. So, you know, you can have a letter of medical necessity. It can be good for the entire benefit period. You just provide that letter to us. That way, when you file your claims, we know that your doctor has prescribed this.
Okay. What else is in there? Other, you know, when you conjure up the image of medical, it's going to a doc, it's a copay, and as you mentioned, it can be dental and vision. What else is in there? I'm not trying to skirt the borders of the law, but some people might have something other than what I just mentioned. I mean, sunscreen, for example.
Acupuncture. That's another one. That doesn't even require a letter of medical necessity. You know, prescriptions. Those are big expenses for a lot of people, and they'll eat up. You know, even if you're only making, you know, a $30 copay. I talk to people all the time now who are on 2, 3, 4 medications every month. So that adds up quickly. It also covers over-the-counter medical devices. So things like bandages, you know, eyewear, contact lens solution, things that you would buy.
Crutches?
Crutches also. Now, one of the changes that did occur due to the Affordable Care Act in 2012 was that over-the-counter drugs and medicines now require a prescription from a doctor to be eligible for reimbursement. That didn't used to be the case before the Affordable Care Act. After 2012, we require that prescription for a drug or medicine, allergy medicine, antacids, things like that that you purchase at the pharmacy. They're still eligible to be reimbursed, but they have to have a prescription.
Can I drill into that a little bit? Let's say that you know, I go to the doc and the doc says you need this. But I don't have to call the doc every time I need a prescription refilled. It's usually for a 90-day period or is that okay, or do I have to get a note from my doc every time I get a refill?
You will have to get you don't have to get a note from your doctor for a prescription refill. That'll be an obvious eligible expense to us, and there will not be any question about it. It's just those over-the-counter items. Now, let's say you take an allergy medicine, you know, either seasonally or on an annual basis. You know, get the doctor to write a prescription for your Allegra, whatever it happens to be, and then we can reimburse you for that allergy medication. Or let's say it's antacid, and you take that on a daily basis. Get the doctor to write a prescription for that once during the year, and we will reimburse you for that medication.
Okay, this is a lot of good information. So I know somebody's out there that's got a question that we haven't tried to volley back and forth. 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. I will mention that it's 10:41 Eastern Standard Time, Monday, November 4th, 2013. We go off the air in about 18 minutes. So don't call us after that. Not that we wouldn't hear, but you can email us. We'll talk about the email in a second. This has been great. Gee, I get a tax deduction for something that I would have otherwise spent. I can cover more of my needs because of the tax benefit. But do I have to fool around with a tax form and claim it on my tax return and support it by some schedule that I can't understand?
No, not at all. And that's the great thing about flexible spending accounts, is that this is a pre-tax benefit, okay? You're getting the benefit on the front end, and you don't have to do anything. What it's doing effectively, it's lowering the participant's taxable income. That's where the benefit comes in. You mentioned earlier, claiming medical expenses, and starting in 2014 because of the Affordable Care Act, it's gone up from 7.5. It's gone up from 7.5 to 10%. So, you know, employees used to say, "Hey, listen, I'm going to deduct my medical expenses." But, you know, if you're talking about an employee that, let's say it's just an employee, make the math easy, it makes $50,000 a year, okay? If they're making $50,000 a year, they cannot start deducting medical expenses until they reach $5,001, the first dollar that they get to deduct. This is a tax benefit that for those expenses that fall below that threshold.
Right. And again, let's compare it to something that's probably near to most people's paycheck, the TSP. Money comes out, goes into the TSP. Using your same example, that individual makes $50,000 a year and decides to put $1,500 into the TSP. You name the number. When they do their tax return, they don't have to do anything. The only thing that shows on the W-2 is the $50,000 minus the $1,500. In this case, it would be $48,500. And if we availed ourselves of the FSA feds, whatever we put into that would further reduce to $48,500. No extra form, nothing to complete, nothing to do improperly or properly.
Exactly. So that's the simplicity of it. You enroll in the program, you get the tax benefit for expenses that you're going to have anyway, and you don't have to do any paperwork for it.
Well, that's good. I like simplicity, even though I are one. I'm a tax accountant and understand finance, but the tax return is just beyond hard.
Yes.
If somebody's just newly in the workforce and they have a W-2 and not, it's okay. TurboTax is great. TurboTax is good for others, but it gets increasingly more difficult. And I hope we don't have a difficult question, but if we do, we're going to answer it. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Two very brief questions. Number one, I'm assuming that FSA feds cannot be used to pay for the medical device tax that might be subsumed or incorporated into the bottom line cost of a medical device deemed medically necessary? Is that a correct assumption?
I'm not sure that I understand the question. Are you talking about paying the tax on the device, or you're out of pocket that you pay that maybe your health carrier doesn't pay for purchasing that device?
Well, I'm not sure to split the question that way, but in some way, shape, or form, if the surtax charged by ACA on a medical device is passed on to me, the consumer, can I in turn then claim that as an eligible expense for FSA purposes?
If it is on one of the eligible medical device that we actually pay for, yes, you can, because that is still considered an out-of-pocket expense to you as the participant. I don't know what the device is, but let's say that you're required to purchase an automated wheelchair. Okay, that's an eligible expense under FSA Feds. You can be reimbursed up to $2,500 a year, depending on what you've put into your account, for that eligible medical expense.
Okay, great. So I tell you, the short answer is yes.
It appears to be yes.
Okay. Second quick question. Normally, you get a pro rata allocation from your pay, say, if it were over 25 pay periods, it would be $100 a week to put in the maximum of $2,500 a year. Is it allowable to put in either a lesser amount or a greater amount as the deduction from your pay and make up the difference toward the end of the calendar year?
I think the short answer to that would be no. Whatever you decide to, whatever you've elected for the year, whether it's that $2,500 or it's $2,000 or $500, that's going to be divided among the pay days. So it's going to be divided by 26 for most employees, obviously. The only other option that you would have to make any change to dividing that by 26 would be to pre-fund your account. Let's say you're an employee who knows they're going to be going on a period of leave without pay. Then you could contact us, call us at our toll-free number and say, I want to pre-fund my full annual election of $2,500, but I want to do it within 10 pay periods because I'm going on leave without pay. Then we could do that for you in that case.
Okay, great. Okay, I appreciate the information. Thank you very much.
And thanks for
calling. We appreciate the call.
Certainly.
All righty, Andrew, we're clear, right? Okay, so let me, we asked for emails, and we got an email this morning. Now, this has really nothing to do with the good information Bart has given us. Before I get into this, how do you get in contact with FSA Feds?
The best way to do it is to go to our website, www.fsafeds.com. We can get email questions there. Also have information on sending an email to our HR inbox where they can ask direct questions about the program. And then they can also pick up and call our toll-free number, which is 1-877-FSA-FEDS.
Okay, great. Well, we got a caller in the interim. Good morning.
Good morning. I had a question with regards. My husband, myself, and my son, under 26, all work for the federal government. My husband has the family health insurance premium coming out of his pay. I assume that each of us can open up an FSA account for $2,500.
Yes, you can.
Okay. And then how is the reimbursement for expenses done? Can it be mixed amongst all three of us, or does it pertain to that person only?
No, it can be mixed among all three of the participants.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All righty. Now the tax question. But I have to do this, one, because I like it, and two, we tell people to email in. This is a very good question, and the answer is not particularly easy, but it's very important to those that would fall under this. to make a long story short, this individual was under age 55 and left federal service and is looking to access their thrift. Now, this could have been a person in the military. This could have been somebody not in the military. Could be somebody in law enforcement. Could be anybody. They left federal service before 55. There's a penalty to take money out of the thrift as well as an IRA once one hits 59 and a half. But the thrift actually has a better deal. It's, if you leave federal service in the year that you become 55 or over, that penalty is not assessed for thrift distributions. Well, this isn't going to do any good for this person because they have left federal service before the year in which they hit 55. And this is very important. Their penalty age is no longer 55. It switches to 59 and a half. And somebody in the military, somebody in law enforcement might be just a little fried of working and saying, listen, I'm going to retire in my late 40s, early 50s. I don't want to go to a second career. I'm looking forward to drawing down on my thrift account so that I can make ends meet and go out and have a good time. And then somebody says, well, you can, but you're going to have to pay a penalty unless you do certain things. And this is where the question comes. Affectionately, these are called the 72T rules. I don't want to put anybody to sleep with that, but it's IRS code section 72, subparagraph T. And it says we need to make an exception for this because this is harsh for some. If you take the money at the end of the year and divide it by your life expectancy, your IRS prescribed life expectancy, and you stay on that payment cycle for at least 5 years or 59 and a half, whichever is later, you can get the cash flow without the penalty. So if somebody did this at 50, then it's 9.5 years. If somebody did this at 45, it's 14 and a half years. If somebody did this at 53, it's 6.5 years. But that's kind of the easy way to look at it. You can calculate this thing three different ways. I won't even try to explain that one because it involves present value, interest rates, and the like. I would urge somebody to go, and you can just Google it, 72T rules, and there's a great one in there, and it's got a calculator. However, the question from the emailer was much more zeroed in at the thrift level. The thrift, while a fine investment, with regards to distributions, it's not extremely flexible to do anything you want. One of the options, there are four options of how to withdraw the money. One of them is to take monthly payments. Now, that has two subcategories. One is just to take the IRS life expectancy, and at the end of the year, your account is worth X. They divide your life expectancy into X, and for that year, that's what you're going to get. Now, that's fine. But the second one says, well, gee, I'm really being dictated each year as to what I'm going to get. So let's say that that was option A. Not that it's the best. It's just the first that we talked about. Option B then comes in and reverses the decision making, and you tell them what you want. Now you have until December each year to tell them what you want for the coming calendar year. Here's where this might avail the gentleman under the 72Ts, other than the one I talked about using the life expectancy, because that's built into the option A. And I'm probably going to lose a few people here, but hopefully not the one that emailed the information in. So the B option allows you to do it. The only thing you don't know is you don't know what the value of your thrift is at the end of December if you have to make the decision in December, but you pretty much know what it is. And so that you could move it around under the favorable options with the 72T. I hope that answered it. And then the first two questions really involve that. I guess all the funds can be placed in the G fund in the last month of the year, and you could guess at what the rate would be. And that's very good. So if you wanted to move it in to know exactly what you had at December 31st, if you move the funds into the G fund and you know the interest rate, you're gonna know what to pick as a monthly payment. So the question was, is that correct? That's spot on. Is there a way around this while staying in the TSP? And that would be the option where you used other than the IRS life expectancy. But again, you need to go to the computer calculator for that because it takes into consideration interest rates at the time you make the decision. The third question was the ideal situation for this person would be to stay within the TSP system. However, it's possible to direct transfer all of the TSP into an IRA, and years later direct transfer back? And the answer is no, only because if you moved all your funds, and that was the first part of the question, is it possible to direct? Correct me, I misstated that. Almost all. And that's the key here. Don't move it all in there because you can't move anything back. So leave some money in the thrift if you wanted to move it over to the IRA and have more flexibility or more choices. Fine. And then you can move it back in. It's hard to believe, but you can move it back into the thrift, although you need to be a little careful with this. The thrift form for doing this is TSP 60. But the only money that you can move into a thrift, whether you're doing what this person is asking or for anybody else for that matter, if they want to move IRA money into the thrift, then they have to use this form. But it can only be fully taxable money coming out of the IRA. So you need to watch out for that. And there's a form that you would fill out, 8606, to tell you what the taxable versus the non-taxable portion is. But this wasn't asked here, but for those retiring, say, between 55 and 59 and a half, they're unaware, many, that you can transfer money after you leave federal service from your IRA into the TSP. And if you did it and you were between 59 and a half and 55, you would turn your penalty age backwards. So it would reduce it from 59 and a half to 55 or 56, whatever they are, and then have the opportunity to take the money out without regards for a penalty. So anyway, I probably put a lot of people asleep with that, but I thought the question was really good, and it's pretty complex, too. Fortunately, I know that one. All righty, we have 2 minutes, Andrew, saying enough of your tax stuff. Bart, back to you. Spotlight's on you.
Okay, well, great. Well, you know, to sum it up, we're entering federal employee health benefits open season. It's going to start next Monday, which ironically is a holiday for most federal employees. But nevertheless, that means they can be at home.
Listening to the show.
Yeah, listening to the show, calling us on their computers, enrolling in the program. You know, the one thing that I'll say, you know, just talking to groups of people over the last month, you know, you look at the state of, you know, being a federal employee, if you will, right now. There have been no pay increases. I think there's a very small one coming up next year. You look at sequestration. Is this going to continue? You look at the possibility of furloughs. You look at the possibility of you know, changing how retirement's calculated. So there's a lot of pressure on federal employees. This is an opportunity, the FSA Feds program, for them to get a tax break on their eligible daycare and health care expenses. And there are not many opportunities for employees to put more money in their pocket. This is one of those.
One more time, how do they get in touch with you?
They can call us on our toll-free number, 877-FSA-FEDS, or on our website, www.fsafeds.com.
Great. Check it out and check us out next week. A holiday, great time to listen to Walt Francis, Tammy, and I. And Walt is shot from a cannon with regards to this stuff. Thank you and have a good week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.